And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Other Side of Midnight. We have a very special show for you this morning, something that I've been planning for some time, something that I've kind of wanted to surprise everyone with for some time. But before we get to that, there's a couple of breaking news things that I thought I would hit at the top of the show, one of which was posted all over the internet today and was a topic of conversation by our imaging team. It was sent to me this evening by Will Farrer, and we decided to post it because if you look at othersideofmidnight.com and you go to the upper right-hand corner of the page, click on Radio with Pictures, that will take you to tonight's guest page. At the very top, link number one, image number one, is a comparison between two views taken by the Dawn spacecraft looking down at the surface of this little 600-mile-wide dollop of something in the dark out there in the asteroid belt, the largest asteroid discovered hundreds of years ago. And this little spacecraft, Dawn, is orbiting around it and is progressively lowering its orbit from 2,500 miles down to 900, and they're now headed down to around 230 above the surface. Well, a few days ago, as they began to start down to that last orbit, they took another picture, and there's a comparison side by side of the two images taken earlier at 900 miles, and I guess the new one is maybe down around 700 or 800, and there's a distinct difference. The new one is on the left. The older image is on the right. The new image is PIA. That stands for Public Information Agency. 19995. Can you say 19.5 in any more complex ways? And if you click on the image, click on link number one, that will take you to a larger version. Rich has given us a clickable link here. And then if you click on the left one, put your cursor right over the pyramid or the magnifying glass. Click on that. You'll see, obviously, we're dealing with an incredibly manufactured object with all kinds of incredibly intriguing, complex internal geometry that is the only one of its kind on the entire planetoid, rising up 4 miles or so, about 25 miles from one end to the other. I mean, this thing is humongous, and it is unique. If there's a common geological process which is doing this, it is obviously not obvious. Now, if you go to link number two and you click on that one, that's Andrew Curry, our resident artist here at the other side. His version several months ago from the earlier imagery of what this might look like, excuse me, if seen from the side, if you're standing on the surface of Ceres, and lo and behold, if you compare the two, if you go back to link one and you look at that, then you look at link two, Andrew nailed it. There's no doubt that he nailed it. So, tonight we live in a solar system where there are pyramids popping up all over. A few days ago we had extensive programs on this show discussing the D&M pyramid on Mars at Cydonia. The new imagery from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter NASA released a few days ago in response to years-old requests by Keith Laney. And if you look at those images, we've had people calling into the show and emailing who basically say that their life has now changed because, good grief, there's an ancient, extraordinary civilization present on Mars. And the photographs and the data now overwhelmingly demonstrate. Well, this new data coming from the Dawn mission, another NASA mission, of this remarkable object on Ceres called Lone Mountain, because it's the only thing like it on the planet or planetoid. That now turns out on high-resolution imagery to be another incredibly structured pyramid, an arcology, a vast city containing potentially millions or maybe even a billion inhabitants when it was new. What's it doing sitting all by itself on the surface of the asteroid Ceres? One serious proposition is that, in fact, it was a flying city, a flying arcology, a spacecraft which came to ground on Ceres as part of whatever happened billions of, you know, millions of years ago, almost 100 million years ago, in the solar system in terms of the model that we've been putting out there over the last several nights. And speaking of several nights, before we get to our guests this evening, I want to talk about last night. Last night, we tried an experiment. It was incredibly successful because we stirred up all kinds of interesting hornets, and they've been flying around all day, and the folks at Bell Gab have been buzzing. Remember what P.T. Barnum used to say, the worst thing on the planet is not to be talked about. Well, I guess we're being talked about. So let me kind of back up and tell you what I had in mind. First of all, some people were objecting to the idea that we ran a rerun and we'd tell everybody it was a rerun. Well, for half the people in this growing audience, because we've been expanding our audience share and our audience numbers incredibly well since this experiment began 4 months ago, and the other night when I came on and I talked about joining Club 19.5, there were some people who interpreted this as our audience numbers were declining. No, not at all. They just aren't increasing as rapidly as I, who has my eye on the prize and my eye on the clock, and knowing that we have to get to a certain place by a certain time to wield a certain political influence with this show, I want those numbers going up faster than they've been going up. Last few days, we've had, 16, 17 people joining Club 19.5 a day, which is about what that was when we started this thing, and up significantly from a lull where people, they get lazy. They forget. We're not their top priority. So reminding people that you might want to join and have the access and the ease and the availability of being part of the club so you can listen anytime and you're not constrained by schedules, well, part of that whole conversation is the fact that we now live in an asynchronous universe. When you see something on TV or you see something on the net or you see or hear something on radio, do you know whether it's live or on tape? Of course not. There's no way to tell. And we live in a schedule era where it's on our schedule. We don't have to all gather around the old Crosley radio at 10 o'clock at night to listen to the Red or the Blue Network broadcasting from Los Angeles to New York, a la that old Orson Welles recreation of a few nights ago. Now we listen our time anywhere we want, on anything we want, at any hour of the day and night we want. And so the experiment in part last night was to see how many people would listen if they didn't think automatically, oh, this is a repeat show. Because part of our problem and part of the experiment this show is designed to investigate is how much of our thinking is actually not thinking, but response to labels. Everything is labeled. Democrats, Republicans are labeled. Independents are labeled. Candidates are labeled. Dog food is labeled. Beer is labeled. Customers are labeled. Consumers are labeled. The Pope is labeled. The churches are labeled. Everything has a label. I mean, I just finished showing you stunning architecture on another planet that should not be there, absolutely decries the idea that we think we know anything about the solar system, really, that all the models being put out there for the last 30, 40, 50 years, supported by NASA and umpteen grants and umpteen papers and umpteen peer-reviewed journals, it's all crap. It doesn't mean a damn thing based on that one photograph you're looking at, PIA-19995. Can you think of a more interesting way of saying 19.5? Now, no one's going to believe that, certainly not because Oglin said it, unless it has a label. Unless some official agency bequeaths its official power and says officially on an official network or an official approved internet channel, whatever, blog, news, commentary, this is an artificial structure left by an ET civilization. Life will now change. Then everybody will change. They'll run at warp 9 to change. They'll run to get ahead of the story. They'll say, oh, I knew it all along, etc., etc. Well, last night was an experiment in taking away the labels. And given the fact that over half of our audience never heard that show because they weren't here, they weren't listening, they weren't members of the club, they weren't members of the listeners that Art dumps to us when we, sign on and sign off at midnight on Pacific time. Part of the experiment last night was to see how many emails we got which said, oh, we heard that show before, versus how many said, oh, that was an interesting show. Because it was an interesting show. And what's interesting is that I've got several emails from people who said, oh, a friend of mine said that was real, and I never heard it. Boy, that was an interesting show. There's one gal from Nova Scotia. Her name is Amanda Curran. She sent me that email last night. My roommate said that she'd heard it before, but I'd never heard it. That was an interesting show. Now, when your rate of increase of your audience is growing asymptotically, which ours has done, there are a lot of people here now that were not here just a month or two ago and who have never heard a lot of the people that we talked to as we began this show covering a range of subjects. So last night was an experiment in no labels. And it worked. The people who are terrified of no labels, terrified of thinking outside the box, terrified of change, terrified of anything which doesn't comport with everything they've been taught that talk radio should be. And remember, we're here to break all the rules. We're here to do something different and interesting and try to keep your attention with content and not give you just labels. Well, last night was a resounding success because the Peanut Gallery did exactly what I expected they would do. And real listeners and real audience said, oh, that was interesting. And a couple people wanted to, you know, They emailed me expressing concern that maybe something was wrong, maybe we weren't feeling well, whatever. And I assured them that tonight I would open the show by explaining what it is we are doing. Now, one reason why I'm trying to identify who new listeners are versus old listeners versus any listeners is because this is the first month in our budgeting cycles that we've been hit with bandwidth charges. This show is not free. You know, Other Side of Midnight has to pay to Keith and the network around $1,000 a month now for bandwidth charges. Unfortunately, per a test that was run a couple of months ago, an awful lot of those charges are useless. They're just sucking energy into the night because people are listening to us on their devices. And when they disconnect, when they fall asleep, their devices don't. And even if we disconnect the program from this end, the computers will not reconnect. But all the other smart gadgets we have, the iPhones and the tablets and the pads and everything else, that does automatically reconnect, which means we are paying for bandwidth for people who are snoring along to our show. And part of what I'm trying to figure out is how many of those people who are just sucking bandwidth uselessly because they don't know enough to sign off before they're falling asleep. They fall asleep listening to us. So I'm coming up with some interesting remedies because, frankly, that is money taken from the people who are paying their memberships, who are, you know, using it appropriately, who take a $5 membership and then can listen anytime in the daytime, in the afternoon, in the morning, whenever, when they're doing something else, so they don't fall asleep and they don't wind up being a useless eater, to use a Kissinger term. There's a lot of complex stuff that goes into producing in this digital age, a show which can reach literally anybody on Earth, anywhere on Earth, at any time on Earth, or off Earth. And part of it has to do with how you allocate and pay for bandwidth. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, as captain of this ship, I'm trying to figure out all the various ways that this audience can help or through ignorance, hinder the ultimate objective, which is to make this a success, to grow the audience, to grow the political leverage, so that when we actually say something is important and we all together focus on that, something positive will happen. Otherwise, we're just kind of going through the motions. Okay, end of rant. Again, I've wanted to do this show for some time. I've invited a friend on who has become a friend over the last several months. She started out calling the show. She then sent us some amazing music. And when we come back, I'm going to introduce you to a writer and a singer and a talented person who's going to give us a snapshot of where music is in this early, early part of the 21st century. We'll be right back. Here's some of the best of Amanda Best.
Smile from you today, and that'll make every little thing okay. Now I know the truth of what I'd always heard. There's a feeling that takes your breath away with just a word. 'Cause when I look into those pretty eyes I see, you are the only one for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Amanda Best. Good morning.
Hello.
You got to lean into that mic. We got some echoes.
How's this?
That's better.
Okay.
Okay, when was that song written?
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, that song actually was written in 2000.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years. Yep. From my first CD.
My.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning. You started out in New York, and you wound up migrating to Los Angeles. While you migrated, the industry's been changing at light speed all around us. How did you, when you were growing up, did you actually think that you were going to be a singer someday or a composer?
That's all I thought I was going to be.
At what early age did you realize?
Okay, well, it started when I was born. Literally, when I was born, I let out a wail, and my mom said that I was going to have a great voice. That's what she said. True story. And I just sang all the time. I sang in class. I mean, I sang at the dinner table. I sang all the time. I also did. I also was an artist. I also drew all the time, like obsessively. And at some point, I just made the decision. Okay, well, I have to do one or the other. And so I figured, you know, I would do music. So I just that was my dream. It was always my dream to do that.
Okay, so when did it get kind of formal? When did you actually say, wait a minute, this actually might work?
Oh, last week.
Okay.
It's never been like this. Well, actually, I don't know if I ever said this might work. I had a plan. I actually used to sing jazz. And my plan was that I would sing jazz, and you can sing jazz forever. It seemed to me you could sing jazz forever, and no one cared about your longevity. You know, the older you got, the better you were, and that was really my plan. So I guess it was around 95 when I thought, yeah, that's what I'm going to do, and then I discovered all different types of music and. You know, a spiritual teacher and all that sort of thing, and my world got bigger, and then I had new ideas, and then, you know, I stopped thinking that I would be a jazz singer, and I started thinking about other things. I thought I was going to be a monk. I thought, you know, I was going to be a computer programmer,
How old were you roughly when you were thinking all this stuff?
How old was I?
Yeah, when you were going through...
About 25. 25.
Really? That's kind of late to decide what you're going to...
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. I'm a late bloomer. I'm seriously a late bloomer. Yeah.
But if you wanted to do the singing all along and you were singing and singing and singing, why did it take so long for you to say, wait a minute, this may be it?
Well, I said that it was... I thought that it would be it. But actually, things were going really well. And... And then they kind of tanked. I don't know. It's kind of like I had this saboteur inside of me. I don't know if anybody else can relate to that. And things just started going wrong. Things were going really well. I was in Boston, and everyone really loved my singing. And you know, I was playing with great musicians, great players. And then things just started to go wompy, and I had to go back to New York. And then I met my spiritual teacher, and that's when I started to have other ideas about what I should do. And it was, you know, it's been an evolution. It hasn't been a straight trajectory, for sure. I've always been musical, but I had a lot of doubts. I mean, I was really like, you know, plenty of people. I was really wounded growing up by lots of different people, and I let it get inside me. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't creep up to the surface until later on, you know, like the saboteur does, and that's what happened. And so, you know, it was like things were going well, and then they tanked, and then I started to get other ideas. And now, you know, and I had to go through a really, really dark night of the soul, like incredibly dark. When I was suicidal. I couldn't function, and it's been only recently, really, to be honest, that I have had the personal power, and that's really what it is, to get going again. Because I really didn't think that I was going to make it, and there was a time when I really didn't care, but I was saved by grace, I guess, by whatever, and and now I'm making a go of it again. So it hasn't been a straight line trajectory by any means. It's been a constantly evolving process of finding out who I am and what I want and what I'm willing to risk everything for. So, yeah, that's about it. Cut it any time.
Okay. I tell you what, why don't you send me in the Skype window your phone number? I'm going to try to fix this audio. And while we're doing that, we're going to play another song. This is the first one I played that you sent me that night after you'd called. It's called Something Between You and Me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's from Amanda Best. We'll be right back.
Thinking about you, can't get to sleep. Wonder if you're still awake or if you're dreaming about me. Saw a girl today, looked just like you. She smiled at me. Grab my phone to call you, tell you how much I want you, but you don't want nothing with me. You don't want to love me, but I'm on to you, baby. 'Cause when you look at me, a wave of passion crashes, my heart beats faster. There's no denying, there's something between you. Told me you've been acting strange lately. Don't make much sense. You talk about me all the time. You're in a daze. You don't reply except to say he's just a friend. You don't wanna love me, but I'm on to you, baby. 'Cause when you look at me, a wave of passion crashes, my heart beats faster. There's no denying, there's something between you and me. What's stopping you, baby, from saying yes to me?
Amanda, are you there?
I am.
Oh, much better. Much, much, much better. Okay. Well, it's really hard when you're trying to talk to somebody and they sound like they're 5 light years away. And we won't do that
sorry.
Yet. Okay. Okay. So music is really, really your life.
It is my life. So I'm also a psychic numerologist.
Okay.
So that's my life too. And yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, tell me how music gets you through the night, because I remember back when I was doing music professionally, I was terribly torn between the things I loved doing that I could only do in one place in one city and the things we loved doing out on the road. But, of course, before the internet, you couldn't do both. Now you can have several different loves and you can make them all happy because we have the internet.
Well, music, I love doing music because I feel alive when I do music. That's why I do it. It's because I have memorable moments when I do music, when I write music. That's when I, and not, you know, not to get all spiritual and uncool, but that's when I feel God, and that's why I do it.
Why is that being uncool?
No, I'm just, you know.
Remember, then
just trying to appeal to everybody.
Well, you know, but you can't appeal to everybody. I mean, when you write songs, you know, when I was writing books, and I used to write books, and I'm going to write books again, my publishers and editors say, you know, write the book you want to read. When I started the show, Art says, do the radio show you want to hear. So when you write music, you write the music you want to hear, and that's what makes you happy. So you have to be you. You can't, you know, compromise that for the, quote, audience, because ultimately, if you're true to yourself, the audience, like they found this show, will find you.
I truly believe that. And I was really just being funny. If I didn't want to say it, I wouldn't have said it. And I totally believe that's true. And it really is about being authentic and being who you are. And yeah, I just, you know, some people get a little wompy when you say God, and so, because they call it different things, or maybe they don't call it at all. But I totally agree. It's about being who you are, and if you are who you are, it doesn't matter what you do, you will be successful, because that is the sweet spot of your personal power, and that will get you to where you want to go.
Some of the things you write about, I mean, there's a lot of different voices. There's other singers doing your work. You actually wrote a kind of a theme song for a television show, I understand. My throat's going.
For a movie, yeah.
Movie, okay.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Okay, well, actually, I wrote the song before it became the theme song. It's called Play of Love, and I wrote it with Crew 22 in Nashville, Grammy-nominated duo of Crew 22. And the scouts for Poison Ivy Secret Society, they found it and they used it as the theme, the opening title theme for the movie. So you watch that movie. That's my song. That's my voice. And yeah, it was so exciting. And when it played, I was actually at the Y in Nashville in the ladies' locker room, and because I mean that was when it was on, and I saw it, and I was literally jumping on all the benches.
You mean like you were doing a Tom Cruise?
Yeah, without the couch.
Okay.
And without the girlfriend or fiance or whatever. So that was really amazing. It was really amazing, and it was great for my family too. Like, oh, we saw it. No, I think it's very, very cool. I mean, yeah, what a moment. And good thing no one else was in the locker room. It was just me. I was just me. I think it was like on a Friday night late, because I would work out late, and it was just me. So good thing. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let us take a little break here, because I want to get as much music in as we have to play from you tonight. Let me pick this one. This is something new that you sent me a little while ago. I think, you know, remember how I've been sending you, like, suggested lyrics back and forth? You missed those?
Your emails are precious to me. I may have missed them. Forgive me.
It's okay. See, when I'm listening to a song, you know, the writer in me comes out, because we actually used to do music, and I'll think of, oh, she could have used maybe that word instead of this word.
Oh, right. Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. Yes. Everything I Didn't Know I Needed.
Right? Yes, yes. Yeah, Everything right. I Didn't Know I Need. This is Amanda again. We'll be right back. You're on the other side of midnight.
Yeah, what I needed was the only thing you believed in. Living high on a one-way street. What can I get? How much will it be? Thought love got in the way of my everyday. But I got nothing, I'm your dog.
And we're back on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Amanda Best. We've been playing for weeks now, the best of best, and now we have the best of best right here. Amanda, I want to ask you this question, and if it's too personal, you know, you can deflect or you can talk about the weather in Saskatchewan or whatever. But your career in your comeback now, because you're scheduled for a gig at the Whiskey A Go Go there in L.A., on the 22nd of November, a couple of weeks from now. But yeah. your career kind of took a hiatus, kind of like Robert Redford in The Natural, and you're now re-energizing your career. If it's not too personal, can you tell folks what that story was? Because being a young composer and an artist in this day and age, as the industry is changing at light speed all around us, cannot, under the best of circumstances, be conducive to a career, but yours went through an incredible series of hurdles and the perils of Pauline. So start wherever you want and just kind of tell people how you made it back.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the analogy I use, actually. The story of Roy Hobbs in The Natural, when he, he was an up-and-coming ball player and, he couldn't do anything wrong, and then he meets the Barbara Hershey character, and he's all, can I cuss on the show?
Yeah, of course.
Do I have to keep clean? Okay. I'm not cussing yet, but I'm getting there. He's all, piss and vinegar, and he meets her in an elevator, well, she's coming out of the elevator, and she says to him, so are you the best there ever was? And he says, yeah, and she shoots him. And it takes him out for years.
Mm.
And, we don't see those years. And then all we see is this older guy, at the plate. And he's batting. And all the scouts are saying, who the heck is that? Who's that old dude? But he's hitting the balls out of the park. And they're like, what's that, And, of course, when he really is straining, you can see him bleeding on the side where he got shot. But he makes the comeback, and of course, the music is incredible, by Randy Newman. It's just amazing.
And so, I love the lamp shots.
Oh my gosh.
Weren't
at the
those...
end when he's blown out all the lights in the stadium. That's incredible. And it is, and it's also, a metaphor for, an enlightenment moment.
Of course.
When you see the light of 10,000 suns, all those lights in your face. So as far as what happened to me, well, I was in Nashville. I was writing in Nashville and I was having a great time. But I wanted to go back to school. I wanted to go back to school for film scoring. And I cashed out, all my savings, and I went back to school. I got a scholarship, not a full scholarship, but I got, a nice scholarship. And I kind of wanted to prove myself too, that I could go back to school, and I really was worth it, that I had that musicianship. But, I'd been in therapy. It wasn't anything new that I was depressed. I mean, I'd been depressed for, a really long time. But
does that seem to go, Amanda, with creativity, that people who are more sensitive than other people kind of get hit with everything, and if you can't filter it, it winds up really going negative?
Well, here's this is my theory on that. It's kind of like, let's say it's you've been abused or something's happened, you know, some traumatic event in your childhood, right? And it gets you bent, all right? So all, you know, four quadrants of your brain, right, where everything is normal, let's just take a normal brain, wherever that is. And, you know, that traumatic event pushes things to the side because let's just say there's scar tissue or whatever. So things can't really be processed normally. So it pushes the normal processes to the side. So to do everyday tasks, your brain, your being has to go through all kinds of machinations to make things work. And that creates new neural pathways that other people don't have. And it gives you access to different ways of looking at life. That's my theory. And because you have to work so hard, you have to rely on things other than the physical, other than, like, you know, regular ways of doing things, just because of the scar tissue that's been created because of that trauma. You have access to a certain level of, let's say, creativity, awareness, and that brings in. That brings in the art, the program, the whatever you're working on. I mean, you can be creative in anything, you know. You can be creative as doing public relations. You can be creative doing, you know, visual art, whatever, music, you know, take your pick. But it's the scarring that happens, the trauma that happens, and this is my perspective, that creates the ability to download information from spaces that other people that have not had that trauma can't access. So that I'm sending out props to all those people that have been through crap in their lives. Mm. God bless you.
Which is all of us. You know, we all have to deal
right.
with stuff.
That is true. It is true. We've all been through it. Yes.
So in your particular case, you're riding high, you're going to Nashville, going back to school, and something happens.
Okay. Right. So I'm in Boston, and I'm being treated by the 12-year-old that they put me with at Beth Israel, right? And they're not doing a very good job. And I fell back into a morbid depression that I couldn't get out of. I mean, really, like I could barely make it to class. When I had to perform, I would shake, I would sweat. I mean, I couldn't function, and it was so. It was so dark. I was living in a hotel on Boylston. I didn't get an apartment. I mean, it just seemed like, you know, it was cheap and I could live there. I actually had a view of Fenway Park, and, you know, so sometimes it was cool. But it was really like, you know, it was so dark. And I just remember the winters. And I mean, you know, I grew up in New York, and I get cold when it gets to be like 75, you know. And the winters in Boston were brutal. And I just remember, you know, not having proper clothes because I was running out of money, and just like walking through the slush in Boston in my sneakers and freezing and not knowing where I was going. And I always had God, and I would always, you know, meditate and pray and all that sort of thing. But it was truly a dark night of the soul. I mean, I couldn't rely on anything. And my heart was broken because I wanted to study again, and I couldn't. I mean, I gave up everything to go back to school, and it wasn't working. And so it wasn't that my career took a hiatus. It's that things tanked so badly that I could hardly function. So I was always doing music, but I wasn't in a position to what I would think of as make progress doing music. And so finally, when I contacted my family after being in Boston for like 9 months, and I said, you know, I don't want to wake up anymore. And they got me to L.A. somehow. And I started studying with another spiritual teacher. My first spiritual teacher had passed away. And I was able to sort of recover, and slowly. I mean, I just remember sitting in the Los Angeles sun, you know, just like baking, and I couldn't do anything but just sit there and just allow the sun to heal me. I'm gonna cry. So it was very, very traumatic. But, you know, slowly, I mean, I had to take baby steps. I was homeless for a while. You know, it was just really a very trying process. So you might say my career took a hiatus, not my hope or my dream of it or even doing it, because I always tried to do music. It was just that I couldn't do it on a level that was, in my moving me forward in the direction I wanted to go. Slowly I started, you know, I started to network, which is really what it's about, network and, you know, and make contacts. And then I started playing in a band and, you know,
This was in LA.
Yes. And playing around town. And so that got me started again. And I started to write again. And, I was still writing, you know, here and there, but, you know, writing with co-writing with other people. And, you know, so slowly I was healing. And, so yeah. And as far as like the music business or any business, you know, it's just about doing what you need to do, really. About doing what you need to do. And if there's some, you know, 5-year-old who's got a great voice and can play 5 different instruments, God bless them, because that's what they need to do. And that's somebody is out there that wants that. But again, it's about authenticity and being who you are. And if you do that, then you will be noticed. And that's, so it's all about circling around like an eagle circling towards the sun, you know?
And being persistent and not taking no for an answer. Hey, I want to play another Amanda Best song. This is one of my favorites because this has so many different levels and meanings. And everyone has been there. You know, when you want to blame everything, this one says, blame in the rain. And it means it really doesn't matter who you blame. The idea is not to blame yourself. This is Amanda Best. We'll be right back.
I've never seen a storm like this, no. Yeah, it's really coming down. And like a fool, I'm pleading, but the clouds won't quit, no. And I damn the drops that hit the ground. The blame in the rain, like yelling at a ghost, like the call that doesn't come, and then cursing the phone, like punching the wall. But I'm the one that bleeds. It's like there's nothing I can do to bring you back to me. Putting it all on you, believing me this way. It's like blaming the rain. Barefoot in my sundress, your arms wrapped around me, and for a moment our past disappeared. I heard the thunder, so I said, it's getting late. Instead of what you needed to hear, blaming the rain, like yelling at a ghost, like the call that doesn't come, and then cursing the phone, like punching the wall. Oh, but I'm the one that bleeds. It's like there's nothing I can do to bring you back to me. And putting it all on you, believing me this way, it's like blaming the rain. You were on that slip road in the fading light, maybe still upset we didn't make it right. Were you reaching for your phone? I guess we'll never know. Oh, how could I have let you go? Blaming the rain, like yelling at for leaving me this way. It's like blaming the rain. I've never seen a storm like this, no. Yeah, it's really coming down.
That is just such a song, Amanda.
Thank you.
It just hits. It just, you know, there are times when you're doing anything and doing this show a lot, you know, when you can blame this, you can blame that person, you can blame, and you just have to stand back and say, blame doesn't work. It's like move beyond it. It's like trying to blame the stuff coming down outside. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm internalizing this song big time.
Yeah, that's what it's about. It's a tough song.
What in your life prompted this? Because the lyrics are just magical.
Well, and I'll tell you this: when I write, I just take dictation, and it is related to me. And when I play this song, people come up to me and they're like, "Oh my God, what happened?" And seriously, and it actually it didn't happen to me. But it was about all those things, you know, the frustration that happens when you have a loss, and you know you're punching the wall, and then and like you're punching a wall, but you're bleeding, you know, you're blaming the rain for the rain coming down. That's what rain does, and it's just like, and it's just cycling. It's obsessing on, you know, what happened and what did you do and what were the last things you said, and then they left and could you have done something, and it's that whole like hamster wheel, you know, and so that's what it is. But I wrote this in Nashville with Scott Jarman, and he told me what he wanted, and so I remember I had access to the Vanderbilt studio where they kept all the grand pianos, because I was friends with the guy who tuned them. Oh, I tell you what, man, that was freaking awesome. And
wait, let's get this picture. Yeah. Amanda is loose in a factory or a ballroom filled with grand pianos.
Yes, that virtuosos have played on. Yes.
Oh my God! Yes. And you played, and you played, and you played.
It was good. I could go in there. I had a key. I could go in there 24 hours a day. Maybe they didn't mean for me to do that, but that's what I did. And so Scott said, this is what I want. I want a song that has a real, you know, meaning, like a real, real tough song. And we thought of a title, you know, because in Nashville, you co-write with lots of different people. And we thought of a title. It's like, Blame in the Rain. Yeah, and he's like, and I want it to be like, I want you to hit the chord and say Blame in the Rain. And so I said, okay. And I went to the studio, you know, where the grand pianos were. Mm-hmm. And I just hashed this out, and we went back and forth, and you know, we came up with the song, and that's what happened. And thank God, you know, it's not my personal story, like the actual event. But that feeling.
But we've all had that feeling. We've all been there. It's like, what do I do? And what this song tells me is take a deep breath, stand back. The universe is flowing on. The earth is orbiting the sun. The sky is clearing. And it's like blaming. Well, here you are.
It's like nothing I can do to bring you back to me. Putting it all on you, believing me this way, it's like blaming the rain.
And this feeling came up later, I think, right?
This feeling
of things that were happening that you couldn't control, it would be like blaming the rain.
Oh, well, you know, it's popped up many times, you know, popped up many times, for sure. So yeah, but I, you know, honestly, I just take dictation. I write and seriously, and you know, spirit writes through me. That's how I feel. And a lot of times, to be honest, I don't understand what I've written until years later.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. And one of my favorite things in the whole world is that Nashville is so great for songwriters. But, I mean, the air is thick with creativity. It's so close, you know? And it's so funny because at this, like, it's known throughout Nashville that, like, many times three different writers will come up with the same idea.
So you're thinking that, you know, maybe your creativity is because you tune in and, you know, the old cliche, it's in the ether. In other words, do you think there's actually communication that you're picking up from a chorus or from one, like, is there a parallel to Amanda? Is there Amanda resonance way out there in the field somewhere that's communicating through you to all the rest of us because she can no longer for a while communicate in the way that we do?
Whoa, that's really deep. Can you flesh that out just a little bit more?
Are you expressing in virtual reality what someone somewhere far away may be trying to communicate but is in a form where she or he cannot communicate it for a while?
Oh yes, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I honestly feel that I co-write with people in spirit. Absolutely. I know it.
Wow.
And in fact, I want to tell you, there's no question. No question. And I want to tell you a story that's very close to my heart. I wrote a song this year. What happened was, I'm a psych numerologist, and I was giving my friend a counseling session. And it was a really long session, and you know, we went late into the night and we said goodnight. And the next day, PMI, she and her husband had passed away about 5 years ago. And the next day I was in the bathroom and he came to me. Her husband came to me in the bathroom. I was like, okay. It was him. It was his energy. And I heard him say, "You helped my wife, so I'm going to help you."
Oh,
and I was like, yeah, and I was like, okay, I need to call somebody right now. and then he said, I love my wife. I love her more than she knows. And I'm always around, usually in the kitchen.
Oh.
And I was like, and I could feel him in my heart. And I was like, okay, that's kind of random. So I'm going to check that with my friend. So the next day I called her and I said, Rafe came to me and he said, you know, that he loves you more than you know, and he's always around usually in the kitchen. Does that make sense? And she said, yes, that's why I'm a chef.
Oh.
And so I nearly, hair blown back, Memorex, nearly fell over, and I was like, okay, and you know, and I told her that he said, you help my wife, so I will help you. And I didn't know what that meant. And, you know, a couple weeks later, she has a beautiful Taylor guitar, and she loaned it to me. And I picked it up, and I wrote this song called There's a Reason. And I wrote it straight through, which happens sometimes. But the interesting thing was that it wasn't the usual song that I write. I mean, I don't use those chords, and I'm a keyboard player, really, and I play guitar. And the lyrics again weren't really, you know, I wasn't really used to them, but I loved this song and I told Mary about it and I said, can I play it for you? And so I went over to her place and I played it for her and she was crying, and she ran to get some of Rafe's poetry and she showed it to me. Lyrics were right out of his poetry.
So you channeled him for her.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think of it as channeling, really. I think of it as collaborating.
Okay.
You might call it channeling, but I call it co-writing. We co-wrote the song.
You know, it's so funny because obviously our writing is totally, totally, totally different. I'm writing metonymic stuff. You're writing creative, lyrical, emotional stuff. But there are times when you're writing, when I'm writing, that I do feel like I'm taking dictation, like there's someone who has some things they want to say, and I'm just kind of rearranging the words till they get it right.
Right, right.
Okay.
I feel I feel like I'm learning the song.
Hold it there.
I feel like I'm learning it. Oh, okay.
Hold it there. We're at the top of the hour, which gives me another excuse to play another Amanda Best song. This is called Shine, and we shall be back on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and you've been listening, or listening, to my guest this morning, Amanda Best.
Been close to the edge, leaned over the ledge. Angels pull me back in time. Heaven only knows where I'd be without someone to watch over me. Whose love I've been searching for, yeah. My heart found an open door, and now I'm sure I shine like a diamond, like a star. I know I am. I shine.
And we are back. My guest this morning is Amanda Best. Amanda, take us to the moment where your career took this sharp left-hand turn. You had everything set up. I think you were doing some major audition, or you were about to do a major gig, and you had an accident in martial arts.
Right. So I was in Nashville, right, and I was doing the artist thing. So what happened was I started working with Crew 22, and I was writing for other artists, and I was singing all the demos, and they said, well, you know, why don't one of the producers call me one day at work? I dove under the desk to talk to him, and he's like, well, why don't we just, you know, have you as the artist? And I was like, okay.
Wait. You mean you were writing, but they wanted you to be out front singing?
Right. They wanted me to be the artist.
Wow.
So I was writing for other people. Right. So, and I was singing the demo. So, well, why don't we just, you know, have you upstairs? And I was like,
When was this?
That was in Nashville. That was, 2004.
Okay.
So I started, you know, like really being the artist and, you know, getting pictures and all sorts of things. And we started to get noticed, by Universal BMG. Germany. My people say, you know, I'm big in Europe. Well, I was. And apparently, you know, the music was really popular in Germany. And so we were being courted by the VP of Universal BMG Germany. And he it was kind of like a flam. He got in, he had some awful personal issues that took him out. And then I was studying martial arts with a cage fighter, actually, in an underground school. And, you know, I was training mostly with large men. And so it was this class where I choked this guy out, and my sheep had to revive him, like push me out of the way and revive him. It was like, and I was just using technique. I wasn't using, you know, force or anything. And then, you know, after he was revived, it was really like, you know, strange moment. I mean, my student just came up to me, and he's like, and he was talking about, you know, choking people out, and he choked me out. I guess, I don't know, to balance scales or whatever. And, he crushed my larynx. Or
oh my God.
Larynx, I should say. Yeah. Bruised my larynx. It was so precise and so quick. It bruised my larynx, and I couldn't sing. I could hardly speak. And,
oh my God, Amanda.
Yeah. So
you're at the height of your career, and because of this stupid accident, whatever happened in the class, this trainer did the same thing to you, and he damaged your larynx.
Yeah. So I had to go to voice therapy, and you know, I don't dwell on it. I really don't, because that happened, but I didn't stop. I mean, I kept writing, and I switched my focus to writing. And I wrote some of my best songs at that time. And so, you know, it was, and we talked a little bit about the saboteur, you know, and I do believe we create things in our lives. And I really believe that I created that because there was a part of me that didn't think I was worthy of success. And so I.
So this is the standard cliche fear of success. And boy, did you take it to weird heights.
It did. But at the same time, again, you know, it helped me develop my songwriting. And I was a songwriter first. I mean, you could say I was a singer first. I was a singer, but then I really, you know, I got into songwriting and that was my thing. And then I got into the artist thing. And being an artist, you know, I developed a persona. I mean, we talk about being authentic. Part of it was authentic, but it was really about, you know, being this kind of sex kitten sort of thing. And doing this type of music, which, you know, I was co-writing everything. But there was a part of me that didn't, and, you know, we were talking about going on a tour and all this sort of, and there was a part of me that just was like, felt like a shell, like I wasn't worthy, like it wasn't, I wasn't supposed to be there, like it was wrong. And that is so, it was so damaging on so many levels, in so many areas of my life. And I know that other people have had that. And so, you know, that's how it manifested in my life. Like I created that animal in my life to get me, and they got me. But at the same time, it's like some people think that or say that the devil is really on our side. You know, the devil creates all these goals.
That's an interesting way of looking. Go ahead.
Right. The devil wants us to overcome. You know, it's like if there were no devil, there would be no heroes. And so I switched my focus and I started writing. I wrote with incredible people, you know, and I started to understand different aspects of the business that I wouldn't have seen from, you know, the artist's perspective. And so, you know, it worked. And at the same time, you know, I didn't have to be out in front anymore, you know, so it was, there was a payoff. And, you know, so I don't want to dwell on it. I'm not saying that if I could go back, I would want it to happen again. Because it was, you know, it's traumatic, like not being able to speak or sing.
Oh, my God.
Very traumatic. Yeah. And so...
So how long did it take you to recover from the physical and the emotional trauma and all the other stuff?
About 4 years, I would
say. 4 years. Wow.
Four or 5 years, yeah. Yeah. So,
and were any of the songs that we've been playing written during that time period?
Yes.
Like which?
Which time period? Before the trauma.
After
the trauma, I wrote "Shine." I wrote "Something Between You and Me." "Everything I Didn't Know I Needed." I don't know if you've played.
We have some days coming up.
Some days. You know what? I wrote "Some Days" right before it happened.
Oh, so this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is interesting.
So it's taken you 4 years plus 4 years plus eight, you know, which is 2015. This happened in 2004.
Yeah.
So we're talking 10, 11 years.
Yeah.
So what does the Whiskey A Go Go thing on the November 22nd represent?
What does it represent?
Mm-hmm.
It represents me, like, just giving it, giving what I got. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
With my awesome band, and I don't know if they're listening, but shout out to Martina and Carlos and Corey and Kenny and Andy if they're listening. I'm working with an incredible band and just, you know, blowing people out of the water.
Okay. If you go to othersideofmidnight.com, click on Radio with Pictures, go down to link number 5. This is the playbill for the 22nd of November. You're there leading into E.G. Daily. There's Super Naked. There's Alicia Kelly. And there you are, Amanda Best. So how do people get tickets?
Okay, well you can contact me. I have a limited number of VIP tickets. I actually do have a limited number of tickets. If you can contact me, if I don't have any more, then you know contact the venue, the whiskey, and ask the Amanda Best. But you can, is my contact information there?
Yes, it is at the top okay. of the. There's two web links for you. If I scroll back, and Sharky, we have you on. You wanted to ask something?
Oh, hey there.
You're on the air.
Amanda Best, eh?
Is this a caller? Hey.
Hey,
how are
Amanda
you?
Best.
Yes. Hello.
My goodness, you're awfully sure of yourself.
I'm awfully what of myself? Sure of myself? Is that what you said?
Well, it's Amanda Best.
Oh,
you're Amanda Worst.
Oh well. Hey.
Do you have a serious question, Sharky? Hello.
Hey, Sharky.
I think he went away. Okay.
Oh, all right. Well, Sharky, I think Sharky tweeted me. He said that he really enjoyed the music. So.
Oh, cool.
Thank you, Sharky, for checking in. I'm sorry if we lost you. If I could, I would like to give a shout out to all the DM Talk people.
Oh, absolutely. Come on.
All my homies, Jeff.
Tonight it's your show, so go ahead.
A-holes, skeptics, these are all the people. Like, I'm not really, like, savvy with Twitter, but, you know, these are the people that, like, I communicate with, and Marty, Recipair, you know, and everybody that, you know, I've ever communicated with, I appreciate you. So it's always so much fun doing the Twitter while listening to the show, man. And I work at night, so I'm like, I'm working, and then when I'm not, you know, taking a call or whatever, I'm tweeting. It's so great because it's like real time. So it's just so much fun. So I shout out to all the DM Talk people. You all know we have so much fun tweeting. And shout out to my band and any other of my friends who are listening. So yes, so thank you.
Sharky. I remember listening to radio when you would listen to radio. And you wouldn't tweet, and you wouldn't twerp, and you wouldn't twerk, and you wouldn't do any of the other things people do on their digital devices while they're... All right, go ahead.
And you're right, and there are times when I am just listening. I am a radio fanatic, and, you know, and you're... And I want to tell you, Richard, you have such a wonderful way with your guests and with your listeners. I don't know if everybody feels like I do, but, you know, you really have a knack for making people feel like they know you. Like, and you know, you are so accomplished. And I mean, and I'm not just, you know, fluffing your feathers. I don't consider myself nice or kind. I'm compassionate, but that's another story. But I'm really, like, I'm being honest. And, you know, it's really great to listen to you. And you have a great voice, too, which is so, so important. So I love radio, and I love listening. But the whole thing, with you've created a whole world. Like, Dark Matter Radio is a whole new era of listening to the radio, because it's like it's a new sensory experience. Yes, you're listening, but you're also like interacting with the other listeners on, you know, mm-hmm. and tweeting like, oh, did you get that? Did you hear that? It's just like, it's so much fun. And some people on Dark Matter are so funny. Oh, it's great.
Yes.
It's hilarious. And I love radio because, well, one of the reasons is because it's, when it is real time. I love when it's real time because I really feel like I'm having a relationship with, you know, the host and what's actually going on. I love it. Radio's in my blood, you know. And so, you know, it's all about that. The whole experience about really like being there and really like, you know, taking a bite out of subject matter and just working it 100 million different ways. Anyway, okay, so I'm done.
That's all right.
If you want to.
It's your show tonight.
There you go.
Let me ask this.
I have a lot to say.
Let me move the conversation sideways. You mentioned several light years ago that you were a psychic numerologist.
Yes.
What is a psychic numerologist?
Okay, well, I'm a numerologist. Like, I do, you know, I do numbers. Like, a lot of your listeners know Glynis McCann. She's a numerologist. I'm a numerologist. And psychic numerologist is simply, you know, I read the numbers and the Holy Spirit reads the numbers through me. Again, it's another level of access, and I can do this because, really because I meditate and because I'm intuitive. And so, The numbers speak to me, and so someone will call me, and you know, I'll take their. I can do straight psychic too, but the reason I'm so accurate is because I also do the numbers. So I'm looking at the numbers, and psychics call me to get a reading, and I do the reading, but I look at the numbers to verify. But the Holy Spirit also speaks through the numbers, so I have another level of verification. So I'm just doing readings, and again, I'm just taking dictation. And it's an honor for me. It's an honor for me to be of service with music, and I pray that my music makes people feel and enjoy themselves and enjoy life and understand things about themselves and their relationships and everything. And I also pray that I'm of service with my reading. You know, it's a joy for me and so meaningful for me to help people understand what they're going through and really. And another reason I do numerology is because the numbers that are there are things that we have set up. Numbers are, you know this, of course, I'm speaking to the choir, preaching to the choir, whatever. You know, numbers are frequency, are vibration, and they are our soul. They are what we're made of. And so when you read someone's numbers, really you're telling them what they already know. And so when you do it accurately, there should be a pain. There should really be a resonance, like, oh, yes.
You mentioned the magic word, right. Resonance. I mean, the whole HD model is all about resonance and numbers and frequencies. And so, yeah, I'm kind of getting there's an old Heinlein expression. I'm kind of grokking what you're saying because it fits. it fits into the idea that life experience is all frequencies. And the way we make sense of it is we resonate with key frequencies, and then we translate that in our minds and our experience into symbols. And then we kind of externalize the symbols, and we say, okay, that represents the map, you know, the map territory and all that. So where did this talent, where did this connectivity come from that now is expressing itself in two forms in your life, in the music and in these readings? When did you suddenly realize, wait a minute, I'm tuning into more than is, quote, normal?
Always. Because I was really, you know, I was left out pretty much.
You mean in terms
of childhood? Yeah, so I had to find other ways to communicate.
But you were an only child, right?
I was sister, yeah. But at the same time, I mean, I was misunderstood, you know, 10 ways till Sunday. They say in Nashville, and you know, it was very difficult for me. I was made fun of. I was the black sheep. All that sort of thing. And so it was at some point in my childhood. I mean, I think I was 6 or 7. I said to God, I said, God, you're my only friend, and it was true. And it's funny. And I think about that. I'm like. You know, some people like would go through poo and they'd be like, well, I don't believe in anything. But it was so weird for me because I didn't have any way of understanding why, I was miserable all the time, why people would make fun of me or be mean to me or leave me out or whatever. I didn't know why. It just didn't make any sense. And why? You know, I didn't do anything to them. And so it made me think that there was something else going on, and that something else was God. And so I just climbed onto the radiator in the dining room of my house in New York City, and I said, God, you're my only friend. And so that was, I knew I was always communicating with something else. Like I said before, you know, I had to develop ways of behaving and communicating that weren't based on physical. And I know that a lot of people listening had to do that too. You know, and maybe they called it something else, but that's what I had to do. And my mom passed away too, and so I always knew that there was an afterlife. I know I always knew this wasn't it. I just always knew that. And my mom was really intuitive, and she taught me to meditate and you know, numerology and the I Ching and all that sort of thing when, you know, it wasn't necessarily popular. Or maybe it was in certain circles, but, she taught me all that stuff. And then, so you asked me, I think I may be over answering your question.
No, no, no.
Kind of always,
No.
I had to learn ways of surviving, pretty much. I guess that's what it comes down to.
So how many were in your family?
I have one sister.
You had a sister.
Yeah.
So did you guys compete for attention from mom and dad? Or?
No, it wasn't like that. No, not at all. No. I mean, I ran after her, you know, because I thought she was perfect and all that. But it wasn't, we weren't competing at all. No. She was incredibly more functional than I was. Like I can't believe we were born in the same womb. She's just very smart, you know, and very spiritual, but she just couldn't handle things, and I was not that way. So I had to go through a lot that she didn't have to go through. I mean, everyone has stuff in their life. I'm not invalidating anything that she had to go through. Some of the stuff that she went through, you know, I say, wow. But it was different. She really could function. I'll just leave it. I was really, a little out there, always struggling to find my footing, pretty much.
How many years between you?
Three.
Okay, so she was 3 years older. What did she go on to do?
A consultant, very, very successful, very, very successful.
But not in the arts or anything with entertainment or anything.
No, I mean, she played violin, you know, very, very talented, creative and all that sort of thing, but very, very practical, you know, very spiritual, very, very practical. And, you know, just kind of did her life. Yeah. Very successful.
It's interesting how families can produce these polarities. I mean, you're incredibly creative and intuitive and in touch and all that. And apparently your sister closed all that down and decided...
No. I don't mean to say that she didn't at all. She didn't close it down. She was just able to also at the same time be grounded. And she could function. And she could make her life work on a level that, you know, was awesome. I mean, I was morbidly depressed. She didn't have that. She was able to, you know, put one foot in front of the other and keep moving. You know, I was suicidal. She was never, you know, it was like that. She could always handle things. I wasn't like that. Things like my depression took me out. It took me out. And I also want to give a shout out to all those people that are going through, whatever you're going through, whatever depression you're going through, I feel for you because, you know, a lot of people don't understand. You don't have like a physical something going on that people can see and identify. They don't understand, levels of depression, or whatever is going on that doesn't have a physical component. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, rock on and do your best. And I would say also, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but one of my suggestions is, you know, find God. Find, you know, and there's some people, I don't want to find God. God screwed me. Well, okay. But maybe it wasn't tweaked right, you know? So the seeking is the journey. The seeking is the power. So keep going. And I really want to reach out to those people who are going through something right now, or have been going through something for a long time. Keep seeking. And if you can, if it's right for you, find God, find whatever, you're Jewish, you're Christian, you're Buddhist, find, if it's your
you
thing,
know,
find a spiritual teacher and also meditate. Meditation, it's the key.
Amanda, what I've often said is, you know, God notwithstanding, it's find something or someone to love because most people go through life and they don't give in to love. Everything else is more important, you know, the right job, the right house, the right kids, the right car, the right school. I mean, I had a friend years ago, I've told the story on the show before, he wanted to be a cultural anthropologist. And his family wanted him to be a lawyer because he'd make a lot more money and he'd be able to afford the Olympic swimming pool and all this. He became a lawyer and became miserable. And it seems to me that you have won because you have figured out what really it's all about, which is you have to love something, someone, anything, and then you can get through anything because the love of the thing or the person or the bigger thing you're involved in, that can become consuming as well as enervating as well as rewarding as well as the reason for living.
Yeah, and it is, again, the sweet spot of your personal power. And what you said is really, really powerful. Because it is, yes, find something to love. It could, whatever it is. And it could be, a larger something, like a larger cause that gets you fired up and just electrifies your being. And you'll know it. And you'll feel it, and then the idea is to amplify that and keep doing it. Yes.
Okay. I want to hear some more Amanda Best. You're at the bottom of the hour. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and Amanda Best is my guest this morning. This is Some Days.
Everybody down, can't seem to smile, can't turn it around. Some days I'm never right in every red light, can't find the bright side some days.
Amanda, where is the music industry these days? Because I don't recognize it. I grew up in a world of vinyl and 8-track studios, and you put out records, and you listened on the radio, and they played your song, and you jumped up and down, and you yelled, and you screamed. And now music is everywhere, and I don't know how artists make a living because it's so available, it's free. How can you make a living when music is free?
Well, there are lots of different ways. Certainly, there's licensing. You know, you record your music and then you put it out there. You get involved with music libraries. You get placements like I have. And so you make money that way. Of course, you need to affiliate with a PRO, performance rights organization. Absolutely a must. Any musician out there who hasn't done that yet, do that 5 minutes ago. BMI, ASCAP, CSAC. Yeah, because some people are like, oh, you know, I'm doing music, you know, or, you know, okay, well, get connected. Because these PROs, they are fighting, literally fighting to pay you. Of course, they make money too, even though they're, you know, whatever. But, I mean, BMI just reached over $1 billion in revenue. I'm with BMI. But you need to be affiliated so you get paid. So when someone uses your music in a TV show, on a commercial, whatever, you can be tracked and you get paid. And that's how you get paid. They're not your enemy. Some people are like, I don't want to affiliate with them. You know, they are your friend. They are fighting for you. They make sure that the venues you play are licensed so that, they can track your live performances. They can track the people that play your music live. Like, let's say you've co-written a song and, you know, that person plays your music in a venue without you. They have to, hopefully report that. And if the venue is licensed, then you will get paid. So affiliated, so they will find you with your RPI number, and you will get paid. That's how you get paid. Now, yes.
No, it just sounds a little like the IRS.
that's something else. It's something else.
Has an amazing computer system to track all these artists, these independent artists.
It is amazing. It is amazing, but that's what the PROs do, and it's necessary to affiliate to get paid.
So you don't have to now to be in L.A. or in New York or in Nashville or in Memphis. You can be anywhere connected with the Internet. And you can literally write and create and register and be an artist in, you know, Podunk, Iowa.
Oh, yes, of course. And that is the truth. The reason that you want to be in Nashville, the reason that you want to be in L.A. And in New York is for access, because you have to network. Especially in Nashville, it's a very closed community. It's a very creative, very amazing community, but it's very closed. And they want you to be there. So, like, it's kind of like when you land in Nashville, you're in a class, like, you know, like their classes, like in high school, whatever, you're in a class, and some people say you need to wait your turn, you know, because people need to get used to you. That's Nashville. LA is a little bit different. Okay. But in Nashville, you want to go there because you want to co-write, because you want to network, and you want to write up. You want to write with people who are further along than you, that are published or whatever. And you meet them by going and playing writer's nights. At the Commodore, at the Broken Spoke, I think it's closed now. You know, even the Bluebird, if you can get a spot at the Bluebird, God bless you. You know, some, there are open mic nights and you can get, a second chance. Blinds around the block were open mic. You don't get in the first time, you get a second chance ticket. And then you get to play the next time. You get to be at the front of the line. You play there, someone sees you, because industry's everywhere in Nashville. Everywhere. It's true that publishers and great co-writers or potential co-writers are in the audience listening to the new writers, because that's all it's about. It's about music in Nashville. And it's not just country. It's mostly country. But it's not just country. It's gospel. It's pop. It's techno. I did my Emotronic CD there. So that's why you want to go to Nashville. You want to go to L.A. because you need, in quotes, to network. You need to be in bands. You need to go play. You need to see other people so that you can meet people. And that's how you do it. And that's how you invigorate your practice, too, because you want to stay motivated. You want to stay where the creativity is. And, yes, you can do it anywhere. You can do it in the sticks of Kansas, wherever you want. You can do it there as long as you're affiliated. Now, you make a YouTube video and you can get discovered. I mean, who is it? Sean Redden. I mean, there are plenty of big music artists that have done that. So there are lots of ways to get paid. There are lots of ways to make money. And that's great. And that's what you want to do, but you have to be in it to win it. You have to be affiliated. So, perhaps I'm over-answering your question.
No, it's exactly. Look, there's a lot of people who listen who are creative. I mean, this show has inspired such interesting creativity because there's a warning out there. If you have talent, Hoagland's going to find you and make you perform. You know, remember how we got Andrew Curry, our artist, our resident artist? We made him perform, and he does stunning stuff. And you made the mistake of calling up and sending me music, and here you are. And we're talking about This Is Your Life. It just seems to me now the industry is going through such radical changes. Like, you can do amazing orchestral things that you need to hire, the NBC Symphony to do. Now you can do on a keyboard sitting in an apartment somewhere on the west side of L.A.
Yes, and I want to speak to that. I really want to say that, you know what, that's great. That's fantastic. And I don't necessarily – everyone, has their opinion, whatever. Whatever. But if you make it doing that, that's great, because talent is everywhere. And, you might have a beatbox and you may get like a bunch of beats going that are really hot. That's amazing. You know, if you're successful, there's a reason. That's great. You know, you can write a score out by hand, or you can create something, with whatever, I'm spacing on the name of this program. It begins with an R. So if anybody knows, they can tweet. Whatever. There's lots of different ways to create music, and they're all valid. They're all valid, at least to me. And even like, pop music today, You know, I love a well-written song. I love a song that goes somewhere. I love a song that digs deep. I love a song that maybe doesn't have a whole lot of words, but really speaks to something. Like that, Sean Redden actually has one of those. I think it's called Never Be Alone. It's really, like, it's really great. And there's a diminished chord in there that's really awesome. There's great music everywhere. Even, like, you know, I don't need to call out certain artists, but there's some artists that, you know, it's on one chord the whole song. You know, that has its place, too. I mean, people love that. People dig that. And that's what it's about. It's about adding life to life. So, you know, there, whatever way you get your music out there, if you're the one playing, singing, writing, if you're using, a computer, whatever, that's fine. As long as you want to do it, it's your passion, it's your creativity. To me, it's all valid. So I think maybe I answered a question.
I thought there was a butt coming up.
No, there's no butt. Like, you know, you've seen me in Great Adventure. Everybody I know has a big butt. No.
No, we're not talking about those people on the show tonight. Okay, I just want to get more of a feel of this incredible. We're rushing at warp 9 in the creative industry, in the arts, and film, and television, and music, and commercials. I mean, you've actually done commercials. In fact, I don't know whether it's legal for me to play one of your commercials, but you know, if we dump out after 30 seconds, as Keith will tell me if it's okay. I want to play this cute one because this is so it's so not you, but it's you because. Well, it's you. Let's just listen. This one is called, what's it called? Toyota, Culver City.
In the market for a new or pre-owned Toyota? Then come to Culver City Toyota, where buying a car is a great experience. Ask about the Jillian Sign and Drive Special. Drive away with your new 2015 Toyota Prius. No money down. Call or come by today. 855-607-9590. 855-607-9590. 855-607-9590.
Culver City Toyota. We treat you better.
Okay, that's a 30-second spot. How long did it take you to do that?
To write it, not long. I did that with your Steffel. I don't know if he's listening. He's an awesome musician, producer in L.A., and I went to school with him, and I adore him. He's amazing. And it took us, like, maybe 3 hours. So that I answered your question, how long it took, but I want to say something about people like Jurg. There, some people in LA are flaky. I know that's really a shocker.
Oh my God, really?
But, yeah, I know. But he is not. He is so, if he says he's going to do something, he does it. He says he's going to be somewhere, he's there. And that, again, that's really important. It's really important to not be flaky. And he is so professional. And,
gosh, I'm shocked. Flaky people in the music industry in Hollywood. That's just. So let me think about that one.
I don't even want to go there. Honestly, I don't. I should just be taking this opportunity to give a shout out to Yuri because he's awesome.
So is this Whiskey a Go Go gig kind of a big deal? I mean, you haven't sung for quite a while in public. You've done a few clubs. You've sent me some pictures. You know, terribly overexposed pictures that you really seem to like. Well, somebody in your entourage needs to know how to take low light level pictures when you're performing on stage.
Yeah, they took a good picture. I doctored. I got creative with that picture, actually. But I sent you some good ones. I sent you some ones that were not overexposed.
Okay. So, again, the Whiskey deal coming up on the 22nd, if anybody's in the lower Southern Cal area, how do you get tickets?
Yeah, they can contact me. My contact info is on the site, right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, so contact me, and I'll get you a ticket. It's really inexpensive, only $12. Like, I don't know how many bands are playing. It's going to be awesome, awesome night, and, you know, I'd love to meet you. So they can contact me. And the Whiskey is, it's big for me. It's really big. Yes, I've been performing around, you know, with other bands and also myself and with... an amazing bassist, Andy. Andy Katt. I don't know if he's listening. He keeps strange hours. He's working all the time. Amazing musician. So we played a lot of different venues, but the whiskey is really big. You know, again, this one's going to be balls to the wall. You know, we're going to let him have it. So.
So, all right, we have two links for you up. We have Amanda's Free Music, which I think is Mandy with Andy or something.
Mandy with an I.
Yeah, and then we have Amanda's Twitter, which I guess goes to your Twitter feed. So if you click on... No, it doesn't? Okay, let me click on it and see where it goes. Okay, that goes to a site called Mandaraba.
Mandaraba.
Mandaraba, okay. I say tomato, you say tomato. Okay.
Right, right.
So, okay, so they can get hold of you through there. All right. And, yeah, because it seems to me that, you know, we need more Amanda Best songs out there. We need more of you writing stuff, and we need more of you performing stuff, and I need more stuff for the show, he said very selfishly.
Oh, shoot. You know, I'll give it. It's definitely on its way. Definitely planning to. Who was the kid? Oh, was it? It was Rain Man that kept saying definitely. All right, I should like not.
Definitely.
Oh yeah.
Okay, now here's something called the Recycler Jingle. Let's hear what this sounds like. Okay, and then you can tell us a story. Hold on.
Had to sell my car because I couldn't pay for the gas. Tried Craigslist, but my friend said, get some class. If you got a deal, keep it real. Pick the place to go for those in the know. Advertising the recycler. Advertising the recycler. Oh, yeah, get a deal at recycler. Sell it fast at recycler. .com. Got a car, a boat, a plane, or a train. A place to rent, a pet that needs a name.
Did you know Recycler.com has amazing online advertising with the most powerful digital marketing anywhere? With guaranteed results for your product or business, Recycler.com.
Advertising the Recycler, advertising the Recycler, oh yeah, get it here at Recycler, sell it fast at Recycler.com.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I recorded that with... Glenn Jordan, who was a member of Shana Na, another amazing musician and producer. For Recycler, I worked for them for a few years, and did that jingle. And that I don't know that dog that you hear this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Glenn.
Oh, it's Glenn's dog.
No, it's Glenn.
Really? Oh, he was barking. All right.
Yeah, yeah, he did that. I was like, that's amazing. And it's the kind of woof that that a dog owner knows.
Yeah.
It's not like a regular. So it was great. That was great. Yeah. And Recycler. I mean, in Recycler, anybody knows about Recycler. It's interesting. So many bands. I mean, Metallica, Motley Crue have. Guns N' Roses have formed through the Recycler.
Really?
Yeah, it's the little engine that could, yeah. Yeah. Wow. It used to be a lot thicker, but it's still plugging away, yeah.
My mind. So how did you get that gig?
The VP asked me to write a jingle. So I did.
Okay. So, I mean, well, you obviously range across the gamut. What is different in writing a commercial from having some... incredible, you know, kind of channeling experience, ducting someone from light years away to write something that's really human and poignant and important. I mean, where do you put your mind to write a jingle?
Oh, same place. It's the same thing, really. There are just certain parameters that you have to stay within. That's all. You know, it has to be a certain length, and it has to, you have to say certain things because you're trying to sell the product. So, but the same spirit comes through. The same creativity comes through. I still take dictation. I just have different parameters.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah. What do you got, you know, what's the big thing you're going to surprise us with in a week or so that you've been working on quietly?
Yeah, well, this show coming up is really, that's what we're working on.
The one at the Whiskey Go-Go.
Yes.
Now, how many else are going to be on stage? How many in your band? In fact, you might, well, introduce your band by name.
Okay, I will. Martina, background singer, amazing vocalist. She's so awesome. Carlos, percussion, great. He brings his percussion everywhere and keeps the beats. Kenny, amazing guitarist, and he keeps it really cool. I like it. Corey, I play keyboard and guitar. Corey is another keyboard player. He's got a great feel. He knows what I want, and he's just awesome in so many ways. And Andy Katz, amazing musician. I've been playing with him for years. Bless his heart. He plays bass, and then I'm on keyboard and guitar and vocals. And Andy also sings, and on some of the songs, everybody chimes in, you know, so it's like a big anthem kind of thing. So that's the band. They rock. We had a rehearsal last night, which was awesome. And, you know, to get musicians together at the same time is really a trick anywhere. And in L.A., the traffic sometimes is so hellish. And, you know, I'm so grateful that we all make it, and congregate here. It was an awesome rehearsal. And so that's what we're working on. So.
Well, everybody who's in L.A. or in the southern area of L.A., around L.A., even San Diego, up to Santa Monica, all the way up to Santa Barbara, if you go on the night of the... What night is the 22nd? It's Sunday, isn't it? Sunday night?
It's a Sunday, yeah.
Yeah,
Sunday.
So you've got the time. Go there. Give Amanda a huge hand because, well, she deserves it. I mean, look at what she's done for this show. I really look forward to when I can play, you know, Amanda tunes as part of the bumpers, because people have been sending me emails. I mean, it's amazing. They'll hear a snatch of music, and it's like music is so crucial in our lives. We don't think about how life would be on this planet if we did not have music. I mean, you obviously have been breathing it from the moment of birth, but there's a lot of other people that it's part of their lives, but they don't realize it's really a part of their lives and how their lives would be so empty if all the music went away.
Well, thank you. And I have a lot to say about that, but I also want to say that, you know, I would love to meet other DM talkers. You guys are hilarious. And you're great. And, you know, we're all interested in similar things. And, I would love to meet you. I would love to meet you at the show. And, so please contact me. And, tickets are really cheap. Again, they're only $12. You get to see me and a bunch of other bands and have an awesome Sunday night. It's going to be at the Whiskey. Totally raucous fun. So yeah, I want to say that. And also, as far as music, It is definitely music and that enlivens our life, that gives life to our life, and also it's the spirit in the music. I truly believe that. So when anybody shares their heart through music or any other creative endeavor, it's really meaningful. And when it's authentic, I mean, it's a blessing, really. So that's what I have to say about that.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's hear one more time. I want to hear Blame in the Rain, and then we'll come back. I can't get enough of this song. And then we'll come back and we'll say a few grace notes, and then we'll call it a night for this weekend. Amanda Best, Blame in the Rain.
I've never seen a storm like this, no. Yeah, it's really coming down. And like a fool, I'm pleading, but the clouds won't quit, no. And I damn the drops that hit the ground. The blame in the rain, like yelling at a ghost, like the call that doesn't come, and then cursing the phone. Like punching the wall,
feels like there's nothing I can do to bring you back to me. And putting it all on you, leaving me this way, it's like blaming the rain. Barefoot in my sundress, your arms wrapped around me, and for a moment our past disappeared. But I heard the thunder, so I said, it's getting late. Instead of what you needed to hear, blaming the rain, like yelling at a ghost, like the call that doesn't come, and then cursing the phone, like punching the wall. Oh, but I'm the one that bleeds. It's like the nothing I can do to bring you back to me. And putting it all on you, for leaving me this way, it's like blaming the rain. You were on that slip road in the fading light, maybe still upset we didn't make it right. Were you reaching for your phone? I guess we'll never know. Oh, how could I have let you go? Away. It's like blaming the rain. I've never seen a storm like this, no. Yeah, it's really coming down.
Well, Amanda, we reached the end of the show.
Oh, no, I have so much more to say.
Well, I guess you're just going to have to come back.
Well, thank you. That would be lovely. I'm in, you know,
but,
you can talk
but,
about.
But there's one little catch. In order for you to come back, you have to write us some more music. You have to give us
absolutely.
Those incredible. I've got to tell you, those lyrics in that song just speak so much to me and so many other people. Because we spend such useless periods of our lives blaming. If we can get above the blame and above the rain, you know, when you're leaving LA on an airplane, remember Peter, Paul, and Mary? And yeah. And you break through those clouds and you see that incredible sky and that environment, that universe above the clouds. I mean, that's to me what that song says. It really can't be blamed on anything but us, and we can rise above it. Thank you, everyone. We reached the end of another week.
Thank you, Scott, producer.
Awesome. On the other side of midnight, my name is Richard C. Hoagland. My guest tonight has been Amanda Best. And until next week, same time, same channel, same station, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.
Yeah, Richard. Yeah.